is Iconic, with your hosts JM, Mark, and Nick.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me, as always, are Nick and Mark.
Greetings.
Hello.
We have a great show for you this week. We're returning to our Class Act segment, and we're taking a look at the Sorcerer in 13th Age. So let's head into Class Act.
Class Act.
Sorcerer. It's a little game-ism. We made fun of somebody's character who was Sorcerer. Yeah,
that's right. So Sorcerers are actually, in the vast history of D&D, a relatively new character class. They were actually introduced for the first time in 3rd edition D&D to give a variety to people who wanted to play wizards. Instead of just having the book-learned wizard who had a breadth of spells but very few that he could cast today.
And he had to memorize the right one in the situation. Sorcerer really opened up the, okay, I don't have as many, but I can do whichever I have. I don't have to memorize it. I just got a slew of spells and
go from there.
From my hip and go.
Yeah, and it was a more innate talent than something that was learned. Mm-hmm. You were born with, it was a little bit more wild. Less spells that you knew, but more flexible. And ever since 3rd edition, it's become kind of a standard trope for D&D fantasy gaming.
Yes, now they're actually a class. Before then, it was, you didn't have to call him the wizard. You could call him a sorcerer or a witch or a warlock, but they all did the same thing. Now they're an actual class.
Very tied.
And they're a lot of fun. I like them.
Very tied to the Vancian magic system still in the older editions of D&D. And then 3.5 came along and Pathfinder and opened up a lot of ideas around these heritages where there was actually a mechanical benefit from where you got your innate magic. And that carries over very well into 13th Age. So let's talk about how they play in 13th Age, because that's why you're listening to our show. Nick, you want to give us an overview of how they work in 13th Age?
Yeah, I think you covered the flavor of it in that they're dissimilar to wizards in that you just naturally have this magical ability. You don't always have the greatest control over it. Sometimes it's more controlling you than you are controlling it. But it's not, you didn't spend years and years studying the magic to figure out how to cast these spells. You just are able to cast the spells. So depending on how you want to play your character, whether you want a bit more book learning, hey, I worked hard for this power, or I'm just that good, you can choose either the wizard or sorcerer. But as far as play goes, you do have a different set of spells that you can choose from the wizard. There's some similarities in some of the spells, but for a large part of them, they're very dissimilar. So take a look at which ones you want to work with. They do make a point of saying that this class is not really that simple of a class to play, because there's a lot going on in each round of combat that you got to keep track of. A lot of extra dice that you're rolling at the beginning of your turns, depending on what you're doing. A lot of extra dice that you're rolling, depending on whether or not you hit, you know, with an even die or something like that. And then some extra choices you have to make between whether or not you want to, you know, for instance, gather power or, you know, expend your power.
Yep. But don't let that scare you from playing a sorcerer. They're really fun, and it's not impossible. It's just some things you have to think about.
And I would imagine, too, that after a couple sessions, you'd figure it out, and you know, it'd become normal to you, and it wouldn't be that difficult to keep track of.
Yeah, and one of the other differences that I noticed in 13th Age between the sorcerer and the wizard actually has the flexibility in types of spells, whereas the sorcerer seems to be pretty damage-focused. Was that something you guys took away?
Yes. He doesn't have the ability of, oh, I can get us through this problem or solve something. He's definitely, I would say, a ranged hitter. And that's what I liked about one of my favorite things, jump ahead a little bit, is gather power, is the sorcerer can really pick, oh, that's the guy we got to take out. I'm going to gather power and hit him with a powerful damaging spell. And if you look through it, most of the spells are just damage, damage, damage. It doesn't have the other things. There's a couple, but yeah, well, if you want to do that, it's more of a wizard type.
Yeah, let's jump into class features then. Mark, why don't you walk us through Gather Power?
Well, Gather Power allows you to, instead of like the simple fighter, swing a sword, damage every round, you get to pick and say, well, okay, I want to gather my power. You don't have to say what power you're gathering it for, what spell, but you can basically take a round off, gather your power, and then unleash it in the following power. And then if you hit, you do more damage. And you'll have to, I'm trying to scroll down to,
it's double damage.
Yeah, some of the spells. So you could look at what you want to do. Now, unlike some systems, you can't just gather, and you know, quadruple and all that. You only get to do it if you don't expend it next round, and say something comes up and you use a different spell that doesn't matter if it's you've gathered power for it, it's lost. But you can gather it again and do it again, which I like because you don't get as many spells as the wizard, but you get to make that spell more effective, more damage. And that's what you're, the idea of if you're a sorcerer, you're dealing the damage, hurling the firebolts and lightning bolts and whatever. So you make it more effective. And if you're lucky, it's a spell that allows you to possibly recover.
Yeah.
And then you're good.
They have a lot of recovery spells. So you're going to have spells that you can use in your encounter, but just like any other power, you're risking them not coming back.
Yes.
Till
and the other advantage is because you have to hit with it,
mm-hmm.
is the escalation die. So if you wait and let the escalation die go up, you have a greater chance to hit. And again, get more damage on that spell because there's nothing like swing and a miss. And you do miss damage and, oh, well, but it's usually the same as hitting with the full bore of the damage.
Well, I will say that the extra damage that you're dealing after you gather power also applies to your miss damage.
It does. So, I mean, you're doing more. So it's not like it's a waste. Yeah. But it's nothing like any of the characters when you swing and miss. And okay, miss damage. Okay, 5 points. Versus I unleash Hades on them.
Right.
It's a lot better. Especially if you can, you're directing it usually for the effect on a certain character. Or maybe like, you know what? I'm going to gather power and I'm going to unleash Breath of the Wipe and hopefully take out a bunch of the mooks.
Well, and you also have the chaotic benefits that happen on the turn you gather power.
Yes.
You might gain bonuses to your defenses, deal damage out to other people, kind of random. But, Mark, you brought up breath weapons, so let's dive into that. Nick, you want to chat about breath weapons?
The interesting thing about breath weapons are the sorcerer doesn't necessarily have to expel this from their mouth. It could just be a bit more of a flavor text. But the mechanics behind it is that you spend your you cast your spell that has the tag breath weapon on it, and then every single round after that, at the beginning of your turn, you roll a
16 plus.
And if you succeed, you're able to then use that spell that turn. You reuse that spell again that turn if you want to.
Yeah.
You don't have to, but and if you use a different breath weapon, then that slot that you're continually reusing then shifts to the new breath weapon spell that you've cast. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the battle, you've lost it or recovered based on whatever the rules are.
Right, and if you choose not to use the breath weapon that you have active, you still need to roll the save again at the end of each turn to keep it going.
Yeah, you can't save it.
Yeah.
Now, there's also, I believe it is defeat or talent breath weapon, because certain things can interrupt it. So you want to take that when you're building your sorcerer so that
prevent
death saves prevent you from doing it. So you take that so you can continue it. I would really encourage if you're doing a sorcerer to take that just because you cast breath, cast something that has breath of something and you get to redo it and it's still that same slot. So you haven't used your other spell. So you can do breath weapon. And since you're a damage dealer, why not just do it over and over and over? As long as you can get your natural 16 plus the hard save,
yeah,
you're good. You can conserve your spells for other fights.
Well, another thing that they do is sorcerers have the chain feature. Some of their spells will jump from enemy to enemy as long as you continue to roll natural even rolls.
Yep.
So you have a lot of potential for putting out massive amounts
of
damage.
Yes, and it's, as a caveat to what I said, most of your spells you look at them are daily. So you're going to have more than one encounter in a day. If you're in the Eyes of Stone Thief, you're going to go encounter before you get a chance to recover. And so the daily spells, they do a lot of damage, but that's like that Breath of the Wild is good as you can roll that 16. As long as you're rolling good enough, you can keep using it, don't have to do other things, and allows you to expend more spells because you only get so many.
Well, very cool. So let's look at talents on the sorcerer. The majority of the talents revolve around what your lineage is, what inherent magic you can draw on. Do you have a tie to the chromatic? Do you have a tie to the elf queen, the archmage?
Yeah. And I would imagine that would reflect itself in your icon relationship dice that you've specified.
Or even one unique thing. Tie your one unique thing directly into that.
Sure. And just to go back to breath weapons, I would make my sorcerers breathe to make it a breath weapon.
Yeah, and it kind of gives that image. As long as you keep making your save, just this breath weapon continually pours out of you. So the icons that you can have a heritage with are the Lich King, the Great Gold Worm, the Diabolist, the Archmage, the Elf Queen, and the Three. What would you guys take?
It depends. Depends that, you know, do I want to be a good guy or a conflicted guy, or, you know, who, what type of player do I want to play? I think each one of the different icons has its own unique twists and hooks on it, and I think any of them would be a lot of fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
The Elf Queen I thought was kind of interesting. And then if you took the Elf Queen's heritage, so at the beginning of the battle, you would roll a d6, and that would specify which elven racial feature that you would get for that battle. And if you already have it, then you obtain the half elf's racial power instead. And each one, I think that would, the reason why I would choose that is that it would add a lot of uniqueness to each battle. Each time that I'm doing this, my player is going to be a little bit different in how I choose and what I'm going to be doing. For instance, if I rolled a 5 or 6 and got the Elven Grace from the Wood Elf, then I have the option, or I have the possibility of getting 2 standard actions per turn, which would then allow me to gather power and unleash that power on the same initiative round.
Yeah. Well, that'd be an interesting one to see how that played out as a player. How does your character reflect the different racial heritages that are kind of bursting forth from him on each turn? What about you, Mark?
It really, like Nick said, it depends what kind of guy you want to play or gal. I kind of like the idea of the infernal heritage, Diabolist. Maybe conception or pregnancy happened near a hellhole, so you're warped that way and you're kind of different. One of the things about the infernal, if you get to epic, is in addition to your normal use of spell frenzy, you can enter spell frenzy as a free action when the escalation die is 5+. So that's pretty cool. Or the Undead Remnant, throw out there the old first edition, Eye and Hand of Vecna.
I was going to mention that. That is my favorite.
If you put out one of your eyes and cut off one of your hands, you get a +1. Of course, at epic, +1 isn't a great deal. But
no, but
if someone's willing to do that, I might even give them a +2 on all attacks just because and that's a little Easter egg for the old edition.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with those, pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely calling out a specific pair of artifacts there from the early days of D&D.
I see, that makes a lot more sense, because I read that and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting, unique. I'm not sure where this is coming from because it's kind of thrown in here randomly, but it makes a lot more sense now.
They were items. Archmage that had Vecna powers, and they were artifacts. And if you cut off your hand and attached that, it grafted to you and then gave you powers.
Oh, nice.
Same thing for the eye. Put out the eye, put it in. If you had both, it did more.
Yeah, because Vecna was a demigod and lost his eye and hand when he ascended to godhood in a fight with his lieutenant. So personally, I like the spell fist the best. Kind of gives you a melee caster. Yeah, Mark just raised his fist in Crusader Defiance. You have a more physical expression of your magic. You get bonuses to AC. You can use ranged spells while engaged with enemies. And then the feat tree is very nice as well. I kind of like the idea of this guy who just has magic erupting from him. I would use all of my breath weapons with that as more of like an aura that just spills out of him. We talked about favorite talents. What about actual powers? We are on page 139 is where the sorcerer powers start. What were some of the ones that stood out to you, Mark?
I do like the breath weapons, and it is keep stacking, and they do good because it's not just a one and done what it is. It tells you when you start like a third level Breath of the Green, and then at fifth level, seventh level, what it does. I like Breath of the Green because it's constant. There's no random.
Deals ongoing damage.
Ongoing. It's a set and it's ongoing. And I like that one.
Okay. What about you, Nick?
I really like the feel of Echoing Thunder. And on that one, you deal a certain amount of damage, and the first enemy that attacks you with a melee attack before the start of your next turn then also receives a certain amount of thunder damage. And yeah. I like the thought of, you know, being able to cast this spell out there and have the shockwave emanate from you and attack someone, and then have it also provide a certain amount of protective benefit to you as well.
Very cool. The two that stood out to me were the Queen's Shadows. It's a fifth level spell that once you cast it, you get to use it as an at-will ability for the rest of the battle. And if you hit on a natural even, you also get to teleport, which I really like. But perhaps the best spell in the book, and I'm including Bard and Cleric and Wizard spell, is the sorcerer spell Stolen Faces. where you can steal the racial powers from your allies, but you steal the power because you aren't, you know, asking permission.
And there's a chance that they will lose that.
Yeah.
One of my favorites as well. There's just a lot more of, I don't know, anything that can get the players to engage with each other more at the table, I am a huge fan of. And where this is actually, in a sense, a pitting player against player, but maybe not quite so directly. I don't know. The thought of being able to nudge the person next to me is like, actually, I'm going to take your racial ability this battle. It adds a lot of dynamics to the table.
And there's a reason why Nick is the most hated player at our table. He plays this way even when he doesn't have his power.
Touch of Evil is pretty good, too, because it's a random demon thing. Another ninth level or a seventh level spell. You roll randomly to see what happens.
Very cool.
A little randomness to it. That's a pretty good one.
I thought Breath of the Void was interesting, that when you hit, not only do they take damage, but they also move down the initiative order. So, again, anything you can kind of do to monkey with the mechanics a little bit piques my interest. You know, in the end, it's hard choosing a favorite, because as I was reading through all of them, none of them looked wimpy or boring or anything like that. They all were very, very interesting and evocative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a few that, like I said, do odd things or different things, but most of them are damage type. So if you want to do more odd things, then I think it's a feat that allows you to take access to wizard spells at third level. So if you want to get away from the damage, you can access some wizard spells and do other things if you want to do that.
Right.
With the caveat that they're always three levels below you, I believe.
They're two. At third level, you can take a first level.
That's it. Yeah.
So, yeah, it is lower. But you can. If it gives you the option. They definitely made it. They said yes. This is the lead into our next episode. they say yes. You can, and I would say as a GM, say yes. Let them do that. Sure, why not? Take stuff away. Modify your characters, your classes. It's like, I'll give you that paladin ability, but you're going to cost you a seventh level spell. Okay, if you want to do it, do it.
And we'll get into this if we get to our power creation episode. It doesn't have to be balanced against every product put out there if it's just used for your home game.
No.
If it's just used for your home game,
it doesn't have to be balanced. Just a warning, as GM, sometimes I've said yes and then regretted it later, but I've gone with it because I told them yes.
Yeah. Well, and then you just kill that character off and then you're fine.
Just charge him a foot or something.
Yeah, hand and an eye.
That's right.
Which I looked it up. The Lich King has a fake hand and is missing an eye.
Yeah.
Makes sense now.
He is very, very reminiscent of Vecna. Let's get into the backgrounds that you can use to round out your sorcerer. Much like the Bard, which is another class act that I really want to hit, the Bard and the Sorcerer have a lot of icon ties just built into the class. You can take a talent as the Sorcerer to get an extra icon relationship. Your heritages tie you into the icons. So as a GM, if you had a Sorcerer in the party, really be pushing those icon relationships. Have him tie in his background and his one unique thing to really bring this to the fore. And then just use that as one of your main icons for the campaign, and you've got a lot of your work done for you right off the bat. So some common tropes about sorcerers is that they did not earn this power. And one of my favorite quotes is the Oedipus quote, "How terrible is wisdom when it brings no profit to the wise." Wizards at least have the fact that they can fall back on, well, I have years of learning. Obviously a wizard of my level would never make this mistake. Whereas a sorcerer just gets it completely under-earned in a lot of ways. So how would you...
Well, wouldn't you say that? I mean, if you write it in the background, and maybe they grew up... My example, half-elves and tieflings would make perfect sorcerers because there's tortured souls that don't fit in anywhere.
Okay.
And maybe he's a half-elf because it was one of those spontaneous things, had two human parents, but they were passing through the Feywood, and this kid came out that's not mine.
Oh, it's like a changeling thing.
Changeling, that tortured soul, tieflings... Perfect tortured souls don't really belong anywhere, but have this innate talent.
But see that, I see that.
Earned it through their background as they grew up, and it wasn't, I didn't grow up, three squares in a room at the Wizards Academy. I learned on the mean streets of Axis.
Well, there you go.
Or what if you did grow up as a child of wizards, and they rejected you because you have this weird, strange ability that makes you so much more powerful, or at least powerful in a different way, and you didn't earn it, and you have to leave home. We do not accept you anymore.
Yeah, there you go.
Dad's been studying for 15 years, can barely light a candle, and I can blow the doors off the house.
Yeah, you can't light a candle, but you can set the wood on fire.
That's right. So I can just burn out. Yeah. So yeah, I think you just put it into the backgrounds of yeah. what you have. That's how I see it. I kind of made that note. I kind of like the berserker applied to here, where magic just takes over. You black out.
When you
all this magic
up
spews out, and you have no idea what happened or why you did it or how you did it.
See, that would be a great campaign hook. That would be a great one unique thing.
That's why I like spell friends. You just random
yeah.
poop happens.
I kind of like the idea of playing a character where he made a deal with the Diabolist for wizardly power and ends up mm-hmm. as this uncontrollable sorcerer. And I think I could really play that.
Sure.
Play that up. What about you, Nick?
I was also thinking of making a deal, but not necessarily with the Diabolist, but with a devil. And kind of referencing back to a previous episode about, yeah, devils are powerful and they will make deals with you and there's a cost involved. And so being able to have a character who all of a sudden now is able to wield massive amounts of magic and there being a price.
Very cool.
Very good.
But a lot of the other ones that I was thinking of ended up falling under one of these other tropes that we've kind of talked about, where you don't
the
know where
model.
It came from. What's that?
The male model.
You know, I could probably work that in somehow. But, like you put on a ring and you think it's innocent enough. And next thing you know that the power that has been imbued in the ring has taken over you and you are its tool instead of it being your tool, that sort of thing. Once you start letting your imagination go, the mm-hmm. possibilities are endless with this.
Yeah. Yep. Well, other ways to build the sorcerer is, again, check out Deep Magic by Kobold Press. You can gain access to more and different spells from that book. Multi-classing is always an option. Do a Spellfist Sorcerer Monk.
Well, that'd be fun.
I'm really going back to that Spellfist. I really like that talent. Well, any other thoughts on the sorcerer before we wrap this one up?
You know, the problem that I have with doing each one of these class acts segments is that after we get done, I really want to go play that at the table. And I don't have enough time to be playing, however many different classes, that many different games. I don't have that much time in my schedule. But one day I will play a sorcerer and make it fun.
Well,
and that's what this game's
yeah,
all about,
all
right?
All of them are fun. Yeah, that is what it's all about, is having yeah. fun. So, yeah, it is, like you say, we started with, it's a little more complicated. I think you can make any of your characters very complicated, but this one I think really works if you think about your background and your icon relationships and why you're a sorcerer.
Yeah.
Instead of just, oh, I have this power, you can have a lot more fun with it, I think.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions or comments, you can contact us at whitedragon@iconicpodcast.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.